This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. And yep, this week's show has a theme. The endless possibilities of life, provided you stay awake, pay attention, and, sure, are willing to take a chance or two. All of us will one day be 77 years old, if we're lucky, that is. And if we're really lucky, we'll still be embracing change as vigorously as today's first guest. Psychologist Paul Ackerman, who now lives in Stanley, worked all over the world for the U.S. government doing development work on disability programs, which, he says, remains a pretty innovative process. But then, 13 years ago, in his mid-60s, Paul Ackerman retired.
I did a lot of things I always wanted to do. I took a Fulbright. I did some international research and development things.
Took a Fulbright after retirement.
Yes. There are several Fulbrights. One is like a full year or more. Then they have what they call an educational Fulbright, which is a request from a government agency in another country to use a Fulbright person for 2 months, 3 months, to do a specific project. And I have been doing a lot of work in India, so the government of India asked for me, and I became a Fulbright fellow there for about 2 months. I went to India, and I did a full assessment of all of their institutions for educating people in the area of disabilities. Then, after that, I did some development work in Bangladesh and the United Arab Emirates, and a lot in India. We started a technology program in India for disability. We did some summit work in autism internationally and this kind of thing. And so I kind of finished those up, did some conference reporting, and did a lot of church work in which I became a member of the operating board of a church, and we lost a pastor. So, we had to be in charge for a year. And then kind of I realized about 3 years ago, I wasn't getting the same kind of pleasure. I was kind of burning out on it.
Yes.
I was kind of felt very isolated and kind of alone.
Where were you living?
Stanley,
up in
the mountains.
In Stanley,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
nobody there kind of knew anything about what I was doing. So there was nobody to talk to, really, except people outside. So I decided to try a different path, a kind of reinvention. And I went to the Institute for Lifelong Learning thinking I would sign up. I'm a musician, have always been a musician.
And
I play keyboard and organ. And so I've always worked in churches. And when I came here, I started working in jazz bands. And we did some kind of exciting things, opened an old theater that hadn't had a show for 50 years.
Where? And
in Luray. It's called the Bridge Theater. It used to be the Page Theater.
I'm familiar with
it. It's still there, and it's still got a great stage. So we did a show as it would have been done 50 years ago, and that was a lot of fun.
Another bride, another groom, another sunny honeymoon, another season, another reason for making whoopee.
But as I said, I was kind of getting burnt out. Every Christmas I was writing cards saying, well, I haven't retired yet. I'm failure at retirement. So I decided to cool it. It was fine to kind of be invisible and be by yourself and this kind of thing. So I thought I would pursue music. And I went to the Lifelong Learning thinking I would sign up for the jazz band that they have. And I talked to one of the faculty members. They had a piano player already, so I would be the second one. And also, it was for people who were really just starting back into music. And he didn't think I would find it that challenging. So impulsively, I said, well, I wonder about music technology. And he said, there's a course over in JMU for all music students in which they have to learn music technology.
Now, define music technology. What do you mean by that?
Well, I went into it because I wanted to learn the softwares that you could write music with. I wanted to learn how to do a good page of music. So if I wanted to arrange for a band or a vocalist, I could do that. I'm from a family of late bloomers, and my brother got his doctorate at age 66 in music. But his big forte was the software on how to write. He was a composer, and he could whip out a concerto in a couple of months, and it would have taken me that long just to write one simple arrangement by hand. So I thought if I could learn these kinds of tools.
Let me stop you for a minute.
Yeah.
Were you having any difficulty with your hands, or was it simply speed?
Age-related, just kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the handwriting. And I figured if I could do it technologically, it would be better. So that's why I entered it, but I got into it, and I found it was so much more. The music technology program, which every freshman music student has to take, was daunting, shall I say. You can imagine the class I went to. Here I was, 77, and everybody else was 21 or 18, and much more competent with computers than I ever will be. I thought I was pretty good because I could do office things, but no, here was these people who knew everything, and we met in a computer lab, which was formidable to begin with. But when the professor, David Stringham, he would put something on the board, click, click, everybody was doing the same thing, and I was still wondering where did he, find that little thing to check. He fortunately was the kind of person who really cared about his students. He'd never had an age discrepancy like this before. So he made sure that I knew what I was doing or what I was getting into. And he stayed after and talked to me, and he and his teaching assistant answered my questions and so forth. Well, one thing led to another, and he assigned us, first of all, to just do a whole browsing of the internet, and we had little leads as to where to go. So I found that for the first time.
Browsing of the internet for what?
Well, for anything we wanted. In other words, set up your goals of what you want to be when you grow up, kind of, and then see what you can find on the internet that might satisfy that. And then here are some cues, if you want to get updated every day on a specific news and a specific topic, you can do this. If you want to find technical things in technology, you can go here. So I started, for the first time, unguilty about playing with computers. And I found that, they were wonderful. Music therapy was one of my first loves. I found that every day I could get news as to what was happening in music therapy, and that the internet would be combed, and there it was in my mailbox every morning.
And so, you learned how to set this up.
I did. And I learned about the lectures that are there in music. I learned about all of the clinical stuff you can find on the YouTube and the other internets. I learned how to search in ways that I'd never done before and got so much more. And so I
was 77 years old.
Exactly.
I just want to emphasize that because I know people of a certain age are royally intimidated.
Exactly.
By computers.
Exactly. For me, it was just a challenge. It's more than a challenge. It was total pleasure. I mean, here I am sort of in my own little mountain cabin. Yeah, I have good television and stereos and things like that, but I don't have a music library. I don't know what's really current. There are lots of things I want to know about artists and composers. There are new music I want to hear. There are different variations. And all of a sudden, it was becoming available, and I knew how to do it. So that was kind of the first step. As I told David Stringham, Dr. Stringham, in one of our quick talks, this is really changing me. I feel totally different about the use of computers now. It's a friend rather than a tool. And I've got all of these resources I can find. And I said, I've really been thinking about this. I was doing a lot of work in the church, and there's mostly the churches nowadays are older people who have lost a lot of loved ones, who are bored to some extent, even though they may be doing some volunteer work, but like a home at night and there's not much to do. Television isn't quite relevant anymore. And some people were getting depressed, and isolated and this kind of thing. I said, look, this works for me. I'm finding a lot of reward from this. I think other people could too. And I think there were people in my church group that I then started showing, you know, just a couple of things that I think they could do with their computers. Almost everybody has a computer now because their kids give it to them and they want them to email home and things like that. So the people have it, but that's all they know what to do. And so just a few little things, showing them where they could collect music and where they could find it and things like this, just change things. So David and I followed that idea and we thought, I wonder if there's a whole area for music technology and helping people develop personally their musical tastes or enrich their lives musically. So we brought two things to the table. One, David brought the whole music technology. I call it a discipline now because there's a whole lot, everything from recording and broadcasting to collecting and making CDs for yourself. That's all of that is technology. It also helps to get over the technophobia on it. You know, it can do something for me rather than just do my emails and this kind of thing. So we thought about that. And then as a music therapist, I began to think even more so about the uses of music, the psychology functions of music, how they can work, and so forth. You know, to make a long story short, the purpose of music educators, which is David Stringham's field, purpose of music educators are to help people learn music. And in many cases, it's just for performance, so that their students can be in an orchestra or so forth. But there's so much value in performance, if you can do it, that it has its own social functions. It makes you part of a group that does things together. So he's interested in that part of it. I'm interested in the part of how that makes, the part of that whole situation, the equation, that says how it works. And
As a psychologist, yes.
Yeah. And what can you do if you can't participate in these groups, as many of my older friends couldn't? Does it always have to be an instrument like a trumpet or something, which may be very difficult to learn at an older age? Or can it be, for lack of a better thing, can it be an iPad, you know, in which you just touch the pad to get the trumpet tone?
You gotta spread joy up to the maximum, bring gloom down to the minimum, and have faith. Or pandemonium liable to walk upon the scene.
As you may have guessed, all the music in this segment is courtesy of Paul Ackerman's Jazz Quintet. That's Paul on piano and synthesizer. Betty Sherry is singing. Denny Toy is on jazz harmonica. Stephen Burkett on saxophone. And Scott Linton plays the drums. The arrangements are Paul Ackerman's as well. After a break with more of 77-year-old Paul Ackerman's Merry Digital Adventures.
Don't mess with Mr.
Back before the break, we were talking with retired psychologist, 77-year-old Paul Ackerman. That's him playing the piano with a jazz quintet, by the way. But what we were mostly talking about were Paul's adventures in the brave new world of music software, with the encouragement and tutelage of JMU Assistant Professor of Music Education, David Stringham.
Then a third party comes into this picture. And that third party being a new director of the School of Music, who is interested in music therapy. And so
you want to name some names?
Jeff Bush, Dr.
Yes.
Jeff Bush. And he came from a university that had a music therapy program as well as a music education program. And he saw how the two could coordinate. He also saw that in JMU, a lot of the students in music education were interested in more than just traditional music education for two reasons. One is that there's not a lot of music education going on in schools
in
now
schools.
Because of the economic situation, and so jobs are scarce. But secondly, a lot of these people will be working in other areas. They will be either volunteering or working in geriatrics programs or places that have people with disabilities. And so they wanted to know a little bit more about other areas that they might be going into, as well as the possibility of music therapy as an alternate career pattern. Well, JMU doesn't have a music therapy program. There's only two universities in the state that do. But Jeff Bush and David and I were interested in whether or not JMU would be interested in setting up a program that would train music educators or give them some of the coursework so that when they went into it on the graduate level, which is becoming basic,
into music therapy
or some of the other therapies, that they would have advanced work and that they could actually have credits already so that it wouldn't be such a long, tiresome thing. So two things came out of it. One is, in the field of music therapy, I'm an old-timer, so I have lots of friends in that. One of them is the head of music therapy in Shenandoah University. And so he and his wife and I, who's a music therapist, are teaching a course called Music and Human Services. These are for music education people, and it's the beginning course in how the psychology of music functions and how it works with people with different disabilities. So that's a beginning clinical course that will transfer graduate work in music therapy. Plus, it's opening up all sorts of new vistas to music education people.
Now, how are you? You started out wanting to learn music technology. How are you incorporating your new knowledge of music technology into that class?
Well, it's not difficult at this point. This first class is primarily a class on observation and the psychology of music. The classes they're observing do have technology in the use of them. The kids they're going to be observing and the adults that they'll be observing with disabilities, the music therapists there do have some technology that they're using. But where the technology aspect is coming from mostly is the classes that David and I set up with the Institute for Lifelong Learning called Easy Music Technology for Seniors.
Good to have that easy in there.
Yeah, exactly. And we've done one course on this already. We held it in the computer lab at Forbes Center. We taught it with me as the peer of the people who are going to be in it, which is what the research shows should be. And then we have two undergraduate students who speak computer music much better than I. So we had a very small class, which we'd asked for. It was exploratory. We had five people who came in every week. On the computer lab, we taught them, first of all, how to find a wide variety of music, you know, using the radio aspects and using...
the radio aspect on the computer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, how they found radio stations all over the world to do what kind of music they want. And then how to collect it with things like iTunes and Amazon and things like that. We taught them how to save it so they could, you know, have it anytime they wanted. We taught them how to put it together and make CDs out of it. We taught them how to find other things that they wanted, like lectures or biographical material. We even did a lot of online karaoke, where you can, you know, have a karaoke party, sing to the things. We even found some wonderful software where you sing to your computer. It videos you as you sing. And then if you even want, you go back and edit it with a pitch control and reverb, stuff like that. It's amazing what's out there.
So if you flat that B, you can sharpen it up.
Exactly. And then you can share it with online communities, which is one of the things that we did too.
What was the response of your five guinea pigs in your class?
They loved it. It was difficult at first. They had to jump into what we've just talked about, being afraid of computers, thinking that they were going to lose everything into feeling, oh, the computer can be my friend. And getting over the fear that something terrible was going to happen, you were going to lose everything, and realizing that there would be glitches, but they could call people. They could call me, or they could come to class the next time, and the students or I would find it. We also did things like creating music. There are so many things you can do now, like GarageBand and things like that, where you can actually create loops or you can record other things. That was a very big response there. There were musicians in this group who just wanted to record what they did when they went to a piano, or they were teaching other people to sing and they wanted these people to hear themselves on a recorder. So with GarageBand, they could do that. They could even put a rhythmic basis to it.
Did you think when you retired from being a government psychologist that you would be discussing a piece of software called GarageBand?
I know.
It's life grand.
Exactly. I still pinch myself.
When you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
What has this experience done for you? You know, as somebody who's lived a very full life, but then got to a certain point where you were sort of winding down, mm-hmm. losing interest in the stuff that had always worked before.
Mm-hmm. What it's done for me is to set me up on another path and motivate me to take it. It answers a lot of questions for me. Do I still have the capacity to do creative thinking and putting it together? And the answer appears to be yes. Secondly, it says, are there places that and people that I can talk to outside that know what I'm talking about, are interested, and will contribute to, you know, the field that I'm interested in contributing? The answer there is yes. The third thing is kind of, am I doing everything that ARP and the doctors and so forth say I should be doing at 78 to keep on going till I'm 88 and 100? And they say reinvention and working with young folks is what you're supposed to do, and I'm certainly doing that. And finding that it works in spades. And there's never a roadblock to keep going.
Many thanks to JMU's David Stringham for suggesting I talk with Paul Ackerman.
But when you're crying, you bring on the rain, so stop your sighing and be happy again. Keep on smiling, 'cause when you're smiling,